Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
How often do you stop to notice the moss in the environment around you? Maybe you see it between the cracks of a patio or on a rock during a bushwalk. Mosses are scientifically impressive. Consider the amphibians of vegetation. They were actually the first plants to emerge from the ocean and conquer the land about 500 million years ago. There are 23,000 species of moss globally, including 1,600 in Australia. And moss inhabits every ecosystem on Earth. But if you've never stopped to think about moss, right now is your chance. And if you have any questions about it, 1300 800 222, the SMS 0467 922 702. My next guest is Dr. Perpetua Turner from the School of Geology at the University of Tasmania. Can we call you a moss fanatic, Pep?
It's great to be here, Suzanne, and I think you can, definitely. A moss lady, I think, is something I've also been termed.
I think in your honours year, everyone at university actually called you that. Is that right?
Yes, it was the caretakers of the water catchment, the oceanic catchment in Melbourne. Yes, I think Perpetua is a little bit of a big name to sort of call out, so moss lady just was a bit easy to roll off the tongue.
Hey, moss lady over there. What started your interest in moss? Where did this begin?
It was rather accidental. I was completing my third year and in botany, and I decided I wanted to do an honours project. And there was a list of projects that were on the board, and the one that took my fancy was actually about tea tree and burning. But unfortunately, it meant that I had to start the fieldwork, but I was doing my third year exams at the time, so that wasn't going to happen. So my proposed supervisor said, "Well, I think we've got another project for you. It's on bryophytes." And I was like, oh, did a bit of them in undergrad. Not much. All right, let's have a look. So I launched into this micro world of plants that are the second largest group of plants in the world and was absolutely hooked.
So bryophytes, is that the official sort of name for the genus moss?
Yes. So the bryophytes, they're in the group called the Bryopsida. So there's three different types that are in that group. There's the hornworts, the liverworts, and the mosses.
Okay. So tell us about moss then. What function does it fill in the environment? What's the point of it?
It's rather overlooked because, well, they're so small, obviously, so people seem to not notice them until you see a massive green carpet. And it's those sort of green carpets that you see that prevent soil erosion or that hold those crusts of soil in desert and dry land areas of Australia together so that we don't get massive dust storms. And we seem to forget that these small little plants actually play a very big ecological role to keep our systems and our ecosystems healthy. So that's a rather a big job for a small plant.
Now, it doesn't have any roots, so how does it get its nutrients?
That's a very important point. Yes, it doesn't have roots. So not like a tree or a shrub. It doesn't pull up nutrients from root stock. It uses these things called rhizoids to just anchor itself to the soil. So when it gets its nutrients, it takes the nutrients through its leaves, across the leaves, across the surface with water. So they're very dependent on water. But having said that, they can survive in areas that just are completely devoid of water for a while. Antarctica is a good example of that, where they don't get so much free available water. It might be between 20 and 80 days a year. And so they just quickly take it across they absorb it across the cells in the leaf and rapidly then transport it throughout the system.
So how long could moss be in a dry environment?
That's a good question. Could be for a very long time, maybe. I can't hazard a guess, but if you go to a herbarium and store moss there, we collect it so that we can identify different species and see what we've got. And if you went to some of those dry mosses in the herbarium and added water, they would come alive again. So some of these specimens can be between 1 to 50 odd years old, even older. So I couldn't hazard a guess as to how much the ones that are, say, 100 years old would come alive, but they can certainly stay dry for years, and I've dug them in my own garden. They've stayed dry and not had water, and then suddenly spring to life.
So they kind of go dormant if they don't get the water.
They do, yeah, they do. They're poikilo hydric, so they go to sleep in that sense, and then they come alive again. They're water dependent. They need that water for reproduction and for survival, so they try and keep everything together while it's not there, and then when it's there, they take full advantage of it.
So your moss so doesn't biodegrade or break down, the moss that's sitting there in the herbarium sort of waiting for water to bring it back to life again. It just stays there.
Eventually it will. Yes, eventually it does. It's just like any other plant in that respect, whereas it's got chloroplasts and the other functional organisms in the cell. But for the most part, you can bring moss back to life. As I said, it sort of depends on how it's stored and how it's going over time.
It's a zombie plant.
Yes, that's a good way.
So is there much, actually, I'll first say I was a bit disappointed. I was doing a bit of reading earlier and I discovered that Spanish moss, which I always think is so gorgeous, you know, that you sort of see dangling over the trees in the southern US states, that's not actually moss, is it?
No, it's not. And there's quite a few plants. So we call them vascular plants and non-vascular plants. So the bryophytes are the non-vascular. They don't have a functional system that carries the nutrients and water through. So the vascular plants often do get called moss. There's beard moss, there's Iceland moss, reindeer moss. Yeah, and Spanish moss is that air one. It's actually part of the pineapple family, so
no,
not a moss at all.
Spanish moss is part of the pineapple family?
Yes. There you go.
Who would have known? Wow. All right. So now how different can moss look? Am I automatically going to recognise moss if I see it?
Yes, you can. Once you get your eye in, with some of the smaller, as I said, vascular plants, it can be tricky. And some ferns. Small ferns can often be mistaken as a moss. But if you're in the cities and you look down on the pavement and in between those cracks and crevices or on the stone brick walls, you will see something green. They're not always green. Sometimes they do go reddish colour and a few other, and there's even one that has a silver sheen to it in the cities. But most of the time that what you're seeing is moss, and it will be moss more than liverworts, because liverworts seem to want a bit more shade and a bit more water than mosses do. So in the cities, mosses seem to abound.
Okay, and is there a wide range of what they look like, or is it just sort of that green velvety texture?
They do come in different shapes or sizes. So we sort of look at them as some of them are tufty and some of them are wefty. That's probably the easiest way to group them all. There are botanical or scientific terms, and that's a problem many people do have when they come across trying to decide what moss is that we don't give them, you know, typical English word terms. They do have scientific terms. So they're called Acrocarpus or Pleurocarpus mosses, and they don't have common names, which can also be a bit tricky. So it can turn some people off, or it can really encourage them and throw them into the deep end, and they love it.
Okay, so tufty and wefty. So what's the difference going to be in how those two types look?
Yeah, sure. So a tufty one, if you can think of what, if people know a little pine tree growing, that is what when you put all those little pine trees together and they can form a clump, that's what a tufty one would be. And the wefty ones are a bit like Spanish moss. They're the ones that trail and that move along the ground. And if you pick it up, it sort of comes in a trailing weft, for lack of a better word. And so they're the two different types. So the tufty ones are often like cushions. And the wefty ones are the ones that trail, and they might hang down from trees. So just like Spanish moss hangs down from a tree, in Tasmania here we have mosses that hang down from trees in a very similar way and form the same function.
I've got Dr. Perpetua Turner with me from the School of Geology at the University of Tasmania, aka Moss Lady. She's our moss expert and fanatic tonight in the nicest possible way. How big can a moss, is it a moss plant or a piece of moss? What's the right terminology?
Usually we call mosses with stems. So you might have, well, I guess it is a piece of moss or a plant because they can trail around. So finding the the core of where it started can be a bit tricky. But Australia actually has the largest moss in the world. So Australia, New Zealand and New Guinea. It's called Dawsonia superba, and it can grow from anywhere between 20 centimetres and 50 centimetres tall. So it's rather a dominant one. Not all the mosses do that. The probably closest ones to that might grow about 10 to 15 centimetres tall. So, yes, it's our giant here in Australia. We're very privileged to have it, and I've seen it in the wild. And they can get even smaller to just millimetres tall. So it's a huge variety in size.
And how wide can a single piece of moss spread?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know, to be honest. When you look at a clump of moss in the forests, you're not looking at just one species or one plant. You could be, well, for example, when I was doing my PhD and I was working in the rainforests and the mixed forests, so the forests with eucalyptus species and with rainforest species in them, I would get, for example, say 110 different species of bryophytes, so that's liverworts and mosses, and only 22 different types of plants. So when you look at a small patch, say a 1 by 1 metre squared area, you could be looking at somewhere between, in that area, like 30 to 50 different species. So it can be very tricky to try and figure out where one starts and where one ends.
And so you were talking about, I guess, that they don't have roots, but how do you find the spot where it began? I mean, how does a piece of moss begin to grow?
Oh, that's where it's similar to ferns, and this is where the evolution comes into it. They have an alternation of generations, we call it. So they start off with a male and a female producing sperm and eggs, and then they find each other and produce a gametophyte, and that gametophyte grows, and then that gametophyte makes what we call the sporophyte, which then makes the sperm and the eggs, and all the cycle starts all over again. So it's a rather complex way that they grow and recreate, but that's exactly the same way that ferns do it. But they also have the advantage that they don't need to do it that way. You can just break off a piece of the plant and scatter it, and you have the potential to grow a whole new plant again. And that's rather the amazing thing, and why they're so good at being used for restoration ecology. So we can do what we call a moss milkshake or a bryophyte milkshake. Moss milkshake sounds better, where you take a whole lot of clumps of moss, you put it in a blender, you add milk, yogurt or buttermilk, you blend it all together, and then you spread it, and you can put it over rocks, and then lo and behold, you start growing moss again.
Why?
And in a forest, it's fantastic.
Why the milk?
There's something in it that helps the moss grow. So some people, when they want to attract moss to an area, will coat a stone, for example, with yogurt. But to make it grow faster, you add the propagules, as we call them, the bits of moss beforehand. Something about the yogurt and what's in it. I'm not a biochemist, so I can't quite delve into that. Maybe someone else knows the exact answer of it.
Wow,
yes.
But to attract moss, put some yogurt on a rock.
Yes, you can use yogurt on a rock.
Amazing. Oh, my goodness. Moss
milkshake. The things you think to do, and I don't know who thought to do that, but I love them for it.
Absolutely. And I must say, clump, that word you've been using much better than my piece of moss. Now, Liam in Morningside wants to know, are there any foreign invasive moss species in Australia?
Well, that is an excellent question, because one of the things with white man, with European colonisation here, we do know a lot about our flora, but one of the things we have done is where we've collected it, and we have done a lot of collections on roadsides and so forth. And so there are some mosses that we do know that have colonised here. Go to the 18th hole and you'll find mosses that shouldn't be here. And alongside some roadsides, but it can be a bit tricky to actually, for some of them, to decide whether or not it's not here, it's not meant to be here, or it is. And that's principally because there's such an ancient group of plants that many of the species we have here are cosmopolitan. They exist all around the world. So a good one, for example, is a moss called Ceratodon purpureus, which exists on every single continent, including Antarctica. And it exploits so many different environments. So it's obviously, you know, been here for quite a while. And then you can get other ones that do come in. And I can't think of, there's one that's on the golf course. It's a it's a moss with a like a Eurynchium or Brachyphysium type name. And yes, we do know that it's not meant to be here, and it does sort of go a bit what you call a bit invasive on a golf course.
Now, Pep, Alem says, the moss that resides in the cracks of my driveway actually seemed to eat the concrete. Could this be true?
Oh, I don't think so, no. There might be something else going on with the concrete. But no, mosses usually aren't that predatory. They're quite, they really don't do any harm whatsoever. And that's probably one of the nice things about them, is that they're just gentle and have a good purpose. One thing they will do is, of course, you keep them in the cracks of your pavement, you get that nice bright green thing happening, you know that you're doing something good for your garden if they're still flourishing, because they do give you a good indication of pollution and water pollution. But no, they really don't really take apart any sort of concretes or stones. Might be just much just erosion.
All right. It's not a predatory moss there, a lamb, maybe something else, but thank you for your SMS. Now, Perpetua, we know moss is old. I thought I'd read 500 million years. Is that about right?
Yes. So the reason you can take that lovely breath of air in, you can attribute that to all the mosses, the bryophytes. So we all know that oxygen started with bacteria and with algae. But when you're coming onto land, the mosses then decided, well, we'll do this. And so back in the Devonian, which is about 400 million years ago, mosses started to produce the oxygen. So they're a very, very ancient plant. And some of the mosses that we've aged, like the ones in Antarctica, for example, can be up to about 500 years old. So they can live for a very, very long time out in the wild.
They're living ones, the ones in Antarctica. They've been alive for 500 years, these Antarctic
They have.
Ones.
They're the old growth forests of Antarctica. That's right. They only grow about a millimetre, maybe a year, in that short time that they have, in that 20 to 80 days when they get exposed and can start photosynthesizing, because they're not underwater or under ice melt. And yes, they can be anywhere between 50 and 500 years. They've been radiocarbon dated because they're able to, because of the way they're photosynthesizing, we've got a really good signal of how long that oxygen's been there for, so we can age them in that carbon.
Well, is there such thing as a moss fossil?
Oh, I don't actually know, but I know someone that does. So I don't think I could not quite answer that one truthfully, to be honest. It's not something I've actually looked at, which is rather embarrassing. Mm. But,
oh, no, that's all right. You've got plenty to tell us. But basically, we've got moss to thank for being here and being able to breathe.
Yes, definitely. It's sort of a bit humbling to think something so small is responsible for something like that, and that it's managed to survive for so long, yeah. Despite all of the climate change and the events that our planet has gone through, these species are still here.
Very hardy and resistant. Now, does moss, speaking of climate change, actually play an important part of working with climate change?
It does, especially in Antarctica. So one of the things we find in Antarctica, Antarctic mosses are rather a unique breed, because they have their own UV, so they are their own sunscreen, if you like, and they're able to give us those good signals of how life on this planet has changed over time. So they can give us that good historical data of how the climate's changed, and then we can look, okay, so this is what's happened in the past, this is what could happen into the future. So they're very good indicators of that, and they're very good indicators of those pollutions and air and water pollution, and that's what we use them for, especially in Europe, to give that detection of what's changing.
Oh, right. So people are monitoring moss populations to sort of say, look, this area is looking okay, this area isn't.
Yeah, we are. So there's some researchers at the University of Wollongong that are doing exactly that for Antarctica at the Casey Station, Australian Casey Station. So there's three species of moss there and one species of liverwort that live there. So the moss, it grows in sort of clumps, if you like, or some people say pollsters, but they're more like little boulders. It's the dominant one, and it's about 100 years old in some places. And yes, we're using that. The researchers are using that to tell us what's happening in the changing climate, especially in Antarctica, where things are changing quite quickly.
Now, when I think of a mossy environment, I generally think of somewhere sort of cool with running water. But does moss actually play a role in temperature control of the surrounding area?
It does, yes. So one of the things that we know about, you go into forests and you get that cool feeling. It's not just because of the big shady trees and the likes. The moss along the ground is actually doing a very big ecological role for those root systems and the soil, keeping everything cool. But also it does the same sort of thing in the Arctic, where it can keep the temperature. It can change the temperature in the Arctic just by being close to the ground. So it does have a very important role in different ecosystems in that way. Mm.
Now, Perpetua, I've got Peter on the line who has a question. Hey, Peter.
G'day, how are you?
Good. What is your moss question?
Well, very interesting subject. But besides that, is moss eatable? Does it have nutritional value? And would it be relatively safe to consume? I can only assume so.
Peter, is this something you would like to do?
Yes, in fact, yes. Would be interesting, yes.
Perpetua, can you eat moss and should you?
I don't know if you're familiar. So thanks for the question, Peter. If you're familiar with the term that you can eat fungi once, well, all fungi are edible. Most are only edible once. But the research into that side of thing for mosses isn't very strong, but one thing we do know is that reindeer do eat moss, and so some species do, but mostly humans know there's no real nutritional value to moss whatsoever. I have eaten moss, I must say.
Were you okay afterwards?
And I would not eat it again.
Right, what does it taste like?
just chewy. No real taste whatsoever. It's wet. That was sphagnum, so which you can get for people putting their potty mixes and so forth. So, and I wouldn't recommend eating it, and there's no nutritional value. But to some of those, like the reindeer I mentioned, yes, they do find something in it that they do eat. And sometimes I think some animals, like in Australia, our wallabies or our burrowing bettongs and so forth, might accidentally eat it. But I don't think they go out on purpose to eat it. It's more just an opportunistic thing that's
pop it down to the moss restaurant for the night. No. Now, look, just on the yogurt, Rhonda says spreading yogurt on the rocks would act as an adherent for moss to attach. And Peter says, isn't adding milk to the moss milkshake just adding amino acids and water, allowing proper protein synthesis?
I think Peter knows a lot more about it than I do, which is great.
You just make the moss milkshakes. That must be fun whizzing it all up in a blender.
It looks great. It's messy. That's the other good thing about it.
Perpetua, thank you so much. I could probably talk to you about moss for another half hour, but unfortunately time is against us. Thank you so much for being here on Nightlife.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Perpetua Turner from the School of Geology at the University of Tasmania, our moss lady.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.